Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is your friendly neighborhood podcast host, play-by-play man, and color analyst for life, Glenn Klein, online, along with the Sex and the Pews choir director and Glow Enterprises rock star,
Owen Pratt,
for a throwback Thursday, May 2nd, 2019.
The only
5-2-2-0-19
in the history of humanity.
Let us continue to choose.
On purpose.
With a purpose.
To give.
A great throwback. It is kind of a throwback to have you in the Hitting Home Media Group studios for the GKO podcast.
Oh, yeah. And not actually turning knobs today.
Name of my sex tape.
We gotta up surprise.
Yes. I'm learning how to fly the plane once in a while.
Oh, yeah. It's nice to sit back and...
I'm learning how to take off, how to fly, and how to land. Unlike the 9/11 bombers, the suicide bombers, who only learned here at a flight school in beautiful FLA, F-L-A, to how to fly. I mean, even then you would have thought that it would have alerted somebody. What do you mean you guys don't want to learn how to take off or land? Well, we just want to learn how to fly. Okay. Will that be cash or credit?
Yeah, right. How do they know? In hindsight, were they like, oh, that makes sense? Like, who was the guy that was like, oh, shit. Damn it. The trainer's side.
That was a bad day, man.
You imagine that one guy at the flight school, like, looking at, like, seeing the news and thinking, no shit.
Bro, they had it figured out.
Fuck.
They had it figured out quickly.
I got
to turn my mic around here.
Recalibration here in the pews in the Hitting Home Media Group studio.
Maybe I just don't need to look at you. As hard as that is to avoid. Yeah, they had it figured out quick, man. I mean, within hours of the Twin Towers going down.
They were able to put the pieces together real quick in hindsight, huh?
They had the videos of the guys at the airport getting on the plane, going through what was the security at the time. They knew what the guy's name was. They knew it was Osama bin Laden.
Hindsight's 2020.
Yeah. Boy, that was a rough day, man. Jesus. But I have to say that my guy Harry Brown, he pegged it, man. Harry Brown, who has passed away from ALS a number of years ago, unfortunately, was just a brilliant man. Wrote so many great books. On his first bestseller was How to Live Free in an Unfree World.
Mm.
It's in the Hitting Home Media Group studio bathroom right now.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, and his whole thing was, yes, the world is unfree, but you can be free in it.
It's beautiful.
It's one of the things that is the heartbeat of our mission, is to get people to realize you really are free.
Mm.
In fact, we were talking about the news last night, and you said, is there anything I need to know? And I said, not really. Because, I mean, it's interesting to me, but by and large, day to day, who's president, what's happening politically, really does not need to affect you. Now, if something like 9/11 happens, obviously that's a major impact on the whole planet, but very rarely does something like that happen. But it happened that day on September 11th, 2001.
The only.
Yeah. Boy, was it ever.
What a Nelson Mandela thing, though, to live free in an unfree world. You know?
Totally.
You ever see that movie, Invictus?
Oh, man. It's one of my favorite. I thought Matt Damon did a really good job with that. I thought Morgan Freeman was brilliant in that movie. But in any case, Harry was a libertarian. I mean, he was the libertarian presidential nominee in 1996 and in 2000. And during the 2000 cycle, he was on my show on the radio station in Clearwater all the time. And after the show was over, or after the campaign was over, I should say, he started his own radio show. It was called The Harry Brown Show. And I co-hosted it. And it was a nationwide show. It was on Radio America. And it was on a bunch of radio stations across the country. The show was on Friday night, a once-a-week program. And after 9/11 happened, everybody here, O, was freaking the fuck out. Mm. I mean, you were what, 7 years old at the time?
Just about, yeah, second or third grade.
Excuse me.
Second grade, I think. Seven.
The whole country was freaking out. Because we didn't know. We didn't know what was next. When something that shocking happens and that surprising, obviously people's minds go crazy.
Yeah, everything all of a sudden just becomes a...
I was driving to the radio station in Clearwater when the planes hit. I stopped at the Riverview Post Office and had heard a quick news update that they thought like a twin-engine plane had hit the World Trade Center, like a little commuter thing. And I remember where I was standing, and I was telling the gentleman in front of me, I said, "Did you hear what happened to the Twin Towers?" And he said, "No." I said, a little commuter plane hit it. He was like, "Really? Yeah." Well, by the time I got back into my truck, then what happened, what was revealed to the world was being broadcast on the station I was going to be on that day. By the time I got to the Tampa International Airport area, all the flights in the entire country had been shut down. There was one flight that was left up there, and it was just like the planes that hit the Trade Center, that hit the Pentagon and the went down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. They were all commuter planes. They were all passenger planes. And there was one left up there. And they were absolutely talking about blowing out of the sky. Because they didn't know. And they it wasn't in contact. They were prepared to shoot down a commuter plane. But then they got in touch and it landed. At that point, every single plane in the United States, oh, America, was grounded. Mm. People were stuck. They were stuck wherever they were. And it was days till they started flying again. Bush took off. He was in Florida when 9/11 happened. He was reading to a bunch of kids at a grade school.
Yeah.
And so they got him up on Air Force One pretty quick, and they just flew him around because they didn't know what was going on. And the communication ability at the time in Air Force One was nothing compared to what it is now. I mean, he could not communicate with the country from there. Now they can. Eventually, I think he landed, I want to say, in Nebraska at an Air Force base there. And then they did not want him to go back to the White House that night. And he insisted. Cheney was there in the bunker. But Bush eventually went back to the White House and addressed the country that night from the Oval Office. And you cannot imagine, bro, how much his popularity skyrocketed. People had hated him because remember that there was a huge controversy. George Bush became president because the Supreme Court said that Al Gore could not keep pressing in with his lawsuits and delaying, and they literally recognized in a 5-4 vote that George W. Bush had become president of the United States of America. Are you focusing?
I'm dreaming
here?
About being president right now. I thought about it this morning. I'm like, fuck, you know what?
You could be president.
Let's start the campaign.
You got to be 35 though, so you got 9 years.
Well,
ago.
If I start now, we can start prepping, making the appropriate connections and shit. Right? Start going to what do you do? Go to town hall meetings and shit.
Well, the first thing you do, if you want to be a successful candidate for president as a male, is you have a high libido. Mm. So check
right.
that one.
So I should probably get that. That whole legal shit in Alabama taking care of that would be the next.
That's
step,
that's episode 20 from Sex and the Pews reference. So anyway, so people really hated Bush on the left, but after 9/11, the entire country came together and supported him. And he had a moment when they started playing baseball again for the World Series, where he went and threw out the first pitch with a full bulletproof vest underneath, and he went to the top of the mound. And he saw Derek Jeter in the tunnel before it, and Jeter said, you're going to go to the rubber? And he was like, well, I thought I would be going. And Bush was a baseball player. And he said, I thought I'd do it from the front of mine. He says, they'll boo you. He said, and don't bounce it. They'll boo you again. So he was pretty much ready. Bush tells the story. He was ready mentally to do this. And then Jeter said, don't bounce it. They'll boo you. So he goes to the mound. He goes to the rubber and throws a freaking blazing fastball right for a strike, and the crowd went apeshit, and the whole country was like, okay,
wow,
we're getting back to normal. Yeah,
What a power move.
No, dude, I'm telling you, you talk about being a dick.
Isn't that amazing?
In a good way.
Yeah.
You got to listen to Sex and the Piece for some of these references.
Just display a confidence and fucking.
And he
was,
and he did, man. And then he went to the World Trade Center, Ground Zero, and people were yelling. You know, he was talking to him, and people were like, "We can't hear you." And he grabbed a bullhorn, and probably one of the most famous things, spontaneous moments. This is why I love politics and history so much. He said, "Well, I can hear you, and the people who tore these buildings down are going to hear from all of us really soon." So that was like, okay. This guy's got this. But then he went off the rails. Then he did the whole Iraq war. And, you know, he was like, you know, there's an old saying, you know, in the West, wanted dead or alive. You know, it was just like he went all cowboy.
How do you think he could have more effectively stayed in that position of power instead of going off the rails and getting too far?
What he should have done is listen to Harry Brown. That's what he should have done.
What did Harry Brown say?
Harry Brown said that it wouldn't have made a difference if Gore had become president or Bush. When the United States faces moments like this, we go to war.
Mm.
But what Harry said we should do, see, people, you know, criticize the thought. What?
It's going to war the most. Are you getting at the, is that an effective thing to do?
No. No, it sucks. There's so many creative ways and much more effective ways to deal with the, what that was, as awful as it was, and it was awful. What that was, Big O, was the biggest mass murder in the United States history.
Yeah.
3,000 people were killed.
Yeah.
It really was a...
More than Pearl Harbor.
Correct. But Pearl Harbor was a military attack. They attacked
a military base, right.
This was a mass murder. Listen, when you sign up for the military, you know that's part of the deal.
Yeah.
That, you know, Louis C.K. says, he does this whole bit where he says he has... What's the thing that he talks about? How he sets it up? He says, "Of course, but maybe." So he says, "Of course, we honor and revere and mourn the loss of our dearly departed servicemen and women when they go and they fight in war. Of course, but maybe if you go over to another country and you start shooting at people from the other country and they start shooting back, that." It's not so weird that you get killed.
Maybe.
So the liberals right away said this is a law enforcement issue. This was a mass murder. This was not a military operation. So what Harry said was that Al Gore would have done the same thing as Bush because that's the moment. And see now, and
Bush, rally the troops. Let's go,
right,
boys.
That's
Let's
right.
Let's go.
And Bush was
bring 'em hell.
Bush was told that now he was a wartime president, and as wartime presidents. That go down in history. And he's right. And Clinton started whining, it was reported, because he said, I never had a war.
FDR, Reagan.
Yeah. Well, Reagan had the Cold War. Reagan had very little military stuff going on. We did invade.
Lincoln to you?
We did invade Grenada when he was or was that? Yeah, we invaded Grenada to liberate a freaking medical school. He shot down a couple of Libyan planes. We sent Marines to Beirut to try to help, you know, stabilize that situation, and then about 250 Marines were blown up in a terrorist attack, and then we pulled them out. And from that point on, the terrorists thought they had us, that we didn't have the balls to stick it out.
Why do you think that is?
Well, let me finish the thought here. So Bush was told, and he recognized, now he was a wartime president. And then he made the fateful decision to have a preventative war. A war that was an optional war. People would have said that the war to get Osama bin Laden out of Afghanistan, which was his home base, that was a war of necessity. I don't think so. Either did Harry Brown. What Harry Brown said we should do is we should hire a armed force that at the time it was called Blackwater, I think. That's not the name either. I'll think of it. But you people that know the history know this. And you put a $1 billion bounty on the head of the people that did it and let them do it.
Wow.
Yeah. And do you know, see, if this is why you need to be doing the controls so you could Google the shit. But there was not Blackwater. It might have been Blackwater.
Like a privatized
military. They were
mercenaries.
But they were professional.
Oh yeah,
they were the cream
like
of the crop.
Seals and shit.
Exactly. Yeah. And when our people go over, when our dignitaries would go over to Iraq and Afghanistan, that's the one. It was Blackwater, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Look it up on your phone, will you? Just look up Blackwater. They had to change their name because they were involved in a controversy. They killed somebody they shouldn't have killed over there.
Yikes.
But dude, think about this. When our generals and politicians and Secretary of State, et cetera, when they would go into the theater of war there, that's where those are the people that would protect them, not our military, because they're the best of the best. It's what?
So Academy with an I is an American private military company founded in 1997 by former Navy SEAL officer Eric Prince as Blackwater.
That's it.
Renamed as XEZ Services in 2009 and now known as Academy with an I.
Does it explain in there why they had to change their name?
Let's go to Wikipedia, source of all.
They definitely had a tragedy happen, and they had such bad
breath. It was just renamed after acquired by a group of private investors.
That's maybe recently.
What do you think about that being able to profit off a killing, though? Isn't that...
What are you talking about? It happens all the time.
True, yeah. I mean, so is just way of life and laissez-faire?
Well, I mean, it's a hired security firm. They hire people to protect them and to catch people that are out to kill them. So, what Harry said, they should get Blackwater or somebody like them, put a $1 billion bounty on their the heads of the people, because we knew who did it. Now, what ended up happening, this is a huge mistake. They had Osama bin Laden trapped in Bora Bora, and Bush made a huge mistake. Because of political correctness at that point, he turns it over to the Afghans to finish the job, and they couldn't do it, and he escaped. And it was years. It wasn't until Obama was president that we got Osama bin Laden. Where was he? In Pakistan, our supposed ally.
Did you see that movie, Zero Dark Thirty?
Yes. It's a hell of a movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jesus. So Harry was right, and Harry was a great man, a great thinker, a libertarian as I am. But recently, I was listening to one of our colleagues in the podcast business, Big O, Joe Rogan, who was talking to another colleague of ours. Both these guys are brilliant. I think Rogan is amazing. He's got there's 630,000 podcasts out there. We have two of them. We have Glenn Klein Online and Sex in the Pews. That's our program celebrating healthy human sexuality and exposing the ill effects historically of religion on a healthy human sexuality. And I would highly recommend it if you can deal with a lot of humor and sex and challenging thoughts. But it's not for the faint of heart, we often say. In any case, so we have two out of 630,000 out there. But Rogan was interviewing Russell Brand, who I think is just terrific.
It's absolutely amazing. I have a decent Russell Brand.
Yeah, you just go with it. Go with it.
You ever think that we've got just... Okay. I gotta get in the flow.
All right. You will. You will.
I'll drop in there at some point. You
definitely will. So Rogan is challenging Russell Brand on a number of things, but he said something to me. He said something that really struck a chord with me, which is Rogan isn't sure if past generations should have the right to mandate through the laws of a country how the next generation should rule themselves.
Don't you think it's a wee bit peculiar that all of the generations before us just to get to decide without really saying anything that we get to do what we do, and that there's a tyrannical force that oversees all of things that manifests a consciousness in the way that we interact with each other? It's just a wee bit, don't you think?
That's awesome, dude.
The powers.
yeah, that's about as
bloody
good as
hell, man. I mean, I'm over here, my hat, my boots, and I just I've been fucked by.
What things were you addicted to that you have now dedicated your life to being a free man not being addicted to anything.
Well, I realized as a young man that I was just trying to find enlightenment, and I tried to find it through drugs, trying to find it through fame, tried to find it through women. Didn't do that for me. Didn't do it. Money, no. And so now I'm just on this path of spiritual enlightenment, and it's been really quite enlightened for me. And now I get to share this thing, and I've got a really long beard, and I wear mandalas and meditate all the time. And I come and talk to Joe Rogan. And I'm really in touch with my feminine side. When I'm around a group of masculine guys, it's just...
yeah, that was great. That was great, and that was great. No, I think those guys talked for like 3 hours or more. It was incredible.
Yep.
But Rogan said that, and it reminded me of a scene that I later showed you from one of my most favorite television docufilms, John Adams, which Paul Giamatti played John Adams and won an Emmy for. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant, 7-episode portrayal of the founding of the country and then what happened right up until John Adams and Thomas Jefferson died on July 4th. They both died on July 4th, 50 years to the day of the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Most American thing I've heard all day, goddammit.
America.
America.
So, but there's a scene where Benjamin Franklin and John Adams and Thomas Jefferson are all in Paris. And they are really feeling full of themselves at this point because the Revolutionary War is over. We freed ourselves from Great Britain, and they were huge players in it. I mean, they were the founding fathers. It was pretty much Adams, Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, a bunch of other key players, obviously George Washington. But, I mean, Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, and Franklin and Adams edited it.
What was it? We find these truths to be sacred and...
Undeniable. The original manuscript had Jefferson writing, "We hold these truths not to be self-evident, but to be sacred and undeniable."
And all men are created equal. It's gospel right there.
Are entitled or endued from the Creator with the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. But it actually said life, liberty, and property first. And they changed it to happiness. So
life, liberty, and property are a right given
to pursue it.
To pursue
it. You don't have it. See, that's the... Now, that we're going to get into this now, okay? Jefferson gets edited by Adams and Franklin. Franklin says to Jefferson, "Mr. Jefferson, don't misunderstand. I concur with your sentiment wholeheartedly." He said, "But it smacks of the pulpit. Sacred and undeniable." And Jefferson's like, this is portrayed in the movie. "It does." And he said, "Dr. Franklin, trust me, every word was precisely chosen." And he said, "I understand that and I appreciate that." He said, "But yours cannot be the only voice in this thing." He said, "Because the Congress is going to try to tear this to shreds. And if we don't go in united, we're not going to be able to get this thing done." Mm. I'm paraphrasing now. So he said, "Wouldn't you agree that these truths are self-evident?" And Jefferson is kind of butthurt at this point because they're messing with his shit right now. And Jefferson was like, "Yeah, I guess so." And he goes, "Self-evident?" And Jefferson says, "All right, self-evident." And Adams joins in, "Self-evident." So these guys were huge players. Fast forward, the Revolutionary War is over. The three of them are in Paris. At this point, Franklin was our ambassador to Paris. Adams was an envoy, and Jefferson was going to take over for Franklin as the new ambassador because Franklin wanted to come back to the United States of America to be involved in the Constitution. And so they get into this big debate, and Jefferson says to Adams and to Franklin, he said, "I am more and more convinced that no generation should be able to make rules or governance over the next generation, that each generation should be able to decide how they're going to live." And Adams was just appalled. Mm. And so basically what Jefferson was describing was anarchy.
That
you just go with what's it as you go. Yes.
You let the spirit lead.
And Adams was appalled. He said, you need to have rules for a smooth running society. And Jefferson was like, perhaps, you know. So eventually, of course, Jefferson becomes president and just acts in a typical control freak way and buys the Louisiana Purchase without the permission of the Congress. And, you know, we doubled the size of the country overnight. I think we got a third of the country for like $3 million from the French.
Yeah,
it's a pretty good deal. So as a libertarian, and now, you know, obviously the presidential sweepstakes are starting to heat up on the Democratic side. Joe Biden just got in the other day. Boy, he does not look good to me. I mean, he looks old. In his opening speech, he was slurring his words. So, I mean, he probably, unless something really weird happens, he's probably going to get the nomination. And we'll see what happens. I mean, he could be Trump. But the economy, at least the way it's being portrayed, is so strong. It's really hard to beat a president when the economy's going well. Because people, you know, people are stressed out by the thought of change, even changing from Trump. All you need is a certain percentage of people to still vote for Trump, and he'll be reelected. So the question that I have for you beautiful humans out there, and I for myself and Owen, is do past generations have a right to establish the way future generations are going to live? Now, I will say this for the Founding Fathers. I would say a lot of things for those guys. They were freaking geniuses. Guys like Jefferson and Adams and Madison and Benjamin Franklin. They built a society with provisions in it, obviously for checks and balances, three branches of government, state governments, federal governments, et cetera, with very limited power, by the way, with the proviso and the ability to change the laws if we want. But, we are so divided now that I don't think we'll ever have another constitutional amendment. Do you know what you need to change the Constitution? You got to have 2/3 of the House, 2/3 of the Senate, 2/3 of the states to do it, and so the state legislatures, and you got to get the president to sign it.
I would counter your point, by the way, by saying that we've never been more united. It's just that the people that are in office right now are divided and are a little lagging in the manifestation of that unity.
What do you mean we're united? And I understand why. You don't watch the news, and that maybe the healthiest thing a beautiful human could do is to stay just plugged into what their life's going on.
When I was sitting at the park last night, and I've never seen more interracial couples. I saw lesbian and gay couples holding hands walking down, and I even threw them a little devil horn, like the rock on sign. I was like, gave them a little wink and a nod. I saw these beautiful, bigger black women, like just so, like, and I could tell it's a pretty gentrified area. There's a lot of white people, and I could tell that they felt a little out of place. But I saw people going out of their way to welcome them to, that restaurant over there is amazing. And so it was a really beautiful moment. It made me appreciate society and where we're at.
That is awesome, and it's true. When a crisis happens in the country, a hurricane, a flood, a forest fire, a tornado, whatever, and you see people rescuing each other, you see people of all races, all ages, helping each other. They don't ask, are you a Democrat? Are you a Republican? Did you vote for Trump? Do you hate Trump? People just help each other. The problem is, Big O, is our political system.
Political system is the crisis.
And the politics, the politicians, we haven't, the only way that this is going to come together is if, God forbid, another 9/11 type of thing would happen. That would bring the country together temporarily. World War II did it. Or just a magnificent man or woman to step up and lead the country to unity. Mm-hmm. I thought Obama had the chance to do it because he ran on that. He ran on hope and change. He said very eloquently, we are not red states. We are not blue states. We are the United States of America, But he didn't do it. That's not how he governed. He governed exactly like a Chicago politician where he was from. A Mayor Daley, big machine, the party machine. And when the Republicans do what the opposition is going to do and drag their feet and try to get him not reelected, instead of holding the Republicans' feet to the fire and doing what Reagan did, Reagan would just go over the heads of the Congress. He'd go right to the people. Obama just went to his corner and ended up being a really awful president. I voted for the guy because I knew, because I want change, and I knew that John McCain was not going to represent anything differently. But Obama would, but he didn't.
So we've got this a lot of bickering and confrontation and conflict going on, apparently, in the it's being portrayed that way by the mainstream media, that there is all this conflict and divisiveness in the political system, and that we've never been more separated, and that there's a straight line divided down the floor, and that on the left side, when one person speaks up, everyone goes crazy, and on the right side, everyone just sits, and then someone else gets up there, and vice versa happens. As the incredible best life coach and mentor and PR expert and marketing aficionado that you are.
An amazing sex god.
Other than that, you're kind of just a normal dude. But you're pretty average.
And humble on top of it, goddammit.
My grandma used to say, a little modesty and I'd be perfect. As a communications effort, do you think it would be more effective to broadcast a message that we are currently all united compared to pontificating about the divisiveness that is going on?
No doubt about it, bro.
Focusing on that
stuff.
But
there's so many things wrapped up in that statement, and thank you very much, by the way. I appreciate that. You get an A+ in the University of Glenn this semester just for that.
GPA has really been turning around.
Just for that verbal essay. I'm in the blue book known as Glenn Klein Online. So, first of all, the challenge is that the people that you saw walking last night and yourself,
right,
don't vote by percentage. This has not changed since the Revolutionary War. And this is true for every organization, every nation. This is how it is. No matter if there's any size to an organization or a business or a country, what?
It's ironic because it's like where all the divisiveness is, the people that are the most united don't focus on the divisiveness, so they're the least educated and informed about the divisiveness, so they don't really have a say in the matter to change the divisiveness.
Exactly. But at the time of the Revolutionary War, a third of the country wanted to stay with Britain. Just like right now, there's a third of British people who want to stay in the European Union. Mm. A third didn't. They wanted a Brexit. And Grexit. So there's a funny inside joke with the one. They wanted a Brexit. And then a third were like, whatever. So what happened there was the ones that wanted to leave the European Union were more organized, were loud enough to get that middle third enough to vote with them. That's what happened during the revolution. There was a third of the country did not, or the people, the Americans, did not want to leave Britain. A third wanted to rebel, saw King George for the tyrant he was, and a third were like, whatever, what the fuck? But enough were convinced by the great leadership and the arguments that were made for independence that, you know, we're sitting in the United States of America right now. But the same thing is true today, bro. You know, when they talk about voting percentages, and they'll say, oh, it was a great turnout. It was, you know, 56%, 62%, record turnouts. They're not talking about eligible voters, people of age that could vote.
What are they talking about?
They're talking about people who register to vote. You can't vote unless you're registered.
Okay.
Okay? So first you got to register.
All right.
Then you got to vote. So when they say that 50% of vote turnout, what they're saying is 50% of the people that bothered to register. All the other people weren't even registered. They couldn't vote. So
they need an app.
So
where you can vote from your phone. Then everybody would do it.
But no.
Because then all of the more crazy.
The Republicans.
We give the power back to the people, and we can't have that.
Right. The Republicans don't want to have people voting. And there's an argument that says it's better to have an uneducated person not vote because they don't know what they're voting for anyway. But see, the people that are plugged in on both the left and the right, it's about a third of the country, just like it always is. Mm. A third of the country couldn't give a fuck. And a third of the country is just like, okay, you know, they plug in, they plug out, they vote sometimes they don't vote. the challenge is that the people that are involved and are energized, they're the haters. They're on team progressive or on team Trump. Team GOP. So it'll take a great leader or a cataclysmic moment again. I think there's going to be a dirty bomb dropped. I hope not ever, but I think that they're certainly working at it.
So you're saying that it's going to take that to provide a context in which someone could stand up and unify the country?
Correct. And this time, unlike what Obama did, that was a historic moment too, the first African-American president. That was dramatic, bro. I never thought I would live to see a black president, ever. I certainly never thought I'd live to see two skyscrapers melt to the ground either. You know, when people, just take a side note for a second. When people say that, you know, shit in the Bible couldn't have happened, that's just crazy. If the Twin Towers coming down was in the Bible instead of on our TV screens, it was that could never have happened. There's no way. But we saw it with our own two eyes. It's incredible. So, yeah, I think that the terrorists will get a dirty bomb. They'll drop it in a major metropolitan area. Hundreds of thousands of people will probably die. It'll really interrupt the economy for a while. It'll be awful. But I think, first of all, it'll be so shocking that I think even the fundamentalist Islamic countries will pause and reevaluate, hopefully, stop funding the madrasas and the terrorism that they're doing. Maybe take a new look at how they treat women in their countries. And it will unify the West. Again, and perhaps this time, unlike what Obama did when he was the first historic president, I went to the Ronald Reagan Library in Simi Valley one time, and I was you drive this, it's just gorgeous there, bro. You would love it. You drive up this beautiful, winding mountain road, and as you get closer to the library, it has every single president, like a banner of them, and it's just one old white guy after another until Obama. It was like, whoa. It was so so cool, but so different, and that was a historic moment enough that if he would have had the integrity to do what he said he was going to do as president, it may have made a huge difference. But he couldn't do it. He could not see himself as the head coach of both teams. See, I liken politics to sports, and when you played football. What position did you play in high school?
Left. Tackle.
So you
offensive
line. Right. So you were on the offensive line. And do you guys play Friday nights down here? Friday nights usually?
Yes.
Okay. So what did you do Monday through Thursday in preparing for Friday night's game as an offensive tackle?
Hit people.
Yeah. But who did you hit?
The defense or each other?
Yeah, right. You were scrimmaging. Yeah. You scrimmaged against the defense.
Right.
That's how I think that. And you did it for a goal. You were hitting your teammates, competing against your teammates to unite once a week to beat the opposition.
Right.
That's what I think a leader should do. That's what I think Obama blew. Bush could have done it after 9/11. See himself or herself as the head coach, and you got the offense, so let's call the offense the Democrats. You got the defense, let's call them the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we're going to compete, we're going to scrimmage, we're going to hit knock heads in order
to prepare.
To compete in the world. To compete against the terrorists, to compete against China, against Russia, against the European economy, etc. Knowing full well that there were fights, I'm sure, when you guys scrimmaged from time to time.
Yep.
But the coaches were there to go, okay, that's enough.
Fuck some kid up once.
You did?
Yeah.
What did you do?
Well, it was the biggest fucking muscliest dude, dumb box of rocks, idiot, stupid, big muscle head on the team. He was like 230, pure muscle, like 6'2", and linebacker. And the whistle got blown, and he's coming straight for me, full sprint. I had run out, and he was just going for the hit. It was after the whistle, and I see him coming, and I thought, you son of a fucking bitch. Well, like, I see it in his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of just like taking the hit, I kind of dropped underneath him and then got so low and then shot my
legs. Stay on the mic.
Shot my legs. So he hits me, but then instead of hitting me head on and toppling me over, I'm so low that his upper half kind of folds over my back. And then I shoot my legs up and extend them and flip him over top of me. And I remember the coach's scene at the time, and I'm this skinny, fucking scrawny, like, kid that used to be fat and played offensive line. And so, you know, I had to fucking muscle my way through that shit and got, you know, targeted a few times. But, you know, I see the coach, like, the defensive line coach over there looking at me. He's like, give me this nod of approval. I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah,
fuck that,
so
dude.
What happened to him other than he flew over you?
He just got humiliated.
Okay, all right, so.
He looked like an idiot.
So fights do happen in scrimmage. I pissed Steve Chase off so bad during a basketball practice once because Steve Chase was a very good basketball player, and I was bad. You know, I hustled, rebounded, fairly decent passer, and, man, I was just – it was during our scrimmage, getting ready for the next game, and I was elbowing him like a motherfucker. And he finally had enough, and he just turned around and swung at me and missed with a right hook. And he got suspended from the team. And I had totally drawn him out. But, you know, and we were good friends, too. A leader will bring a team together and recognize the dynamic of scrimmaging, of knocking heads, but realize at the end of the day, we are all Americans. This is one of the reasons I think it's so heinous what they're doing to the transgender people who are serving in our military. They're not allowing them to serve in the military now? Are you kidding me? These are Americans. They're putting their fucking lives on the line for us because of the religious right. They don't recognize that the transgender community is part of the team. Fuck that shit. Really. So it would take a leader to do that. So let's say, for the sake of discussion, that would happen. Then the question is, how do we proceed? And would a leader be able to make an argument that Jefferson made, Thomas Jefferson, and that Joe Rogan was making, that, you know what, the rules that were established, we need to revisit. And perhaps we want to keep all of them, or we want to keep some of them. Mm. But, you guys, we are under a country that has not adjusted since the 1950s, when they passed the constitutional amendment saying that the president couldn't serve more than two terms.
You think Joe Rogan could run for president successfully, given his mass following and audience and the reach that he has separate from the mainstream media that he's built for himself?
What? How would you define successful? Become president?
Yeah, you think he would stand a shot in hell?
He would have to run for the two-party system. See, we didn't have parties when this thing started.
You don't think a libertarian option would be able to win?
The only way, probably not, because you got to understand something. The cards are stacked. The deck is stacked against anybody running against the Democrat. Because the Democrats start with a huge electoral college advantage. They don't have to spend one penny, and they know they're going to get California. It's the biggest state. They know they're going to get New York. They know they're going to get Illinois and a bunch of other states, too. What am I doing?
You're a little off the mic there.
Name of my sex tape. So an independent or a libertarian would have to overcome not only the Democrats' natural advantage, but the Republicans have states and regions of the country that are like that, too, like Texas. Like, you know, Florida used to be. Now we're a purple state. We are a purple state, and that's cool.
North Florida, South Florida.
That's true.
So what if you're talking about a dirty bomb as being a catastrophe, a huge mass just.
It'd be a bad day.
Negative shit. What if the current political system and the killing that's going on in the world as a result of the ineffectiveness of the country that has the most guns in the world. What if that was portrayed marketed as the thing that is the dirty, as the dirty bomb, as the negative thing to fight against, as the opposition, as the thing to fight against?
Right, but the problem is that there's a huge percentage of people that would never be able to mentally ascend to that thought.
Well, isn't that kind of what Trump ran on, though? And Bernie, too, the anti-establishment kind of platform, if you will?
Yes, but Bernie did not even get the nomination of his party.
Right.
Probably is not going to again. And Trump was running against such weak candidates. and didn't give a flying fuck what happened. I mean, when he ran initially, he told his people that he just all he wanted to do was finish a strong second or third to use it as leverage in his negotiations with the NBC television network over his deal with the Apprentice.
I think it worked.
And it was like he screwed up in reverse.
Well, now he's got all the publicity he needs.
Well, man, what an attention whore that guy is. Holy God, is he not well. But they all are to a certain extent. But, I mean, he's...
Sounds like I'm pretty qualified.
He does... you're balancing out, bro.
I gotta change it up a little bit. I'm getting too predictable.
You're doing what's this called? You're calibrating.
Calibrating.
Yeah, you're calibrating. So the reason for this show is I just want to challenge people. Listen, everybody would unite over a dirty bomb. Everybody would agree that this sucks, and that nobody deserves this. People think that they have the right to bear arms and to have as many arms as they want. They have a constitutional argument there, of course. The Supreme Court has upheld the right to bear a handgun and to bear arms. But let's put it up for a vote. Let's see if the country as a whole wants to keep that. I, as a libertarian, I think that, and see, I'm a constitutionalist because even though that I'm starting to sort of swerve towards anarchy or just reinventing ourselves as we go along, because this is one of the healthiest things an adult can do during the course of his or her life is to keep reinventing yourself. The most successful people in history keep reinventing themselves. And like him or hate him, Donald Trump reinvented himself. He was a real estate developer, then he became a television star, and now he's a fucking president of the United States. Yeah. That's some good reinvention. Impressive. I mean, look at Obama. He was a community organizer. Then he was a small-time politician. Then he was a senator. I mean, I guess you could say he stayed in the same line of work. But over and over, I mean, Ronald Reagan was an actor. And then he became a politician. And then he became president. So reinventing yourself, I think, is incredibly important and a huge factor in a satisfying life. I think we need to reinvent ourselves as a society. And even though I am leaning this way now, I want to challenge you beautiful humans to think about it. But also, if you're going to have rules, follow them. If you're going to have a constitution, follow it. That's what I think. Mm. If you're a parent, if you're going to have rules for your kids, follow them. Have as few rules as possible because they're going to break them. That's human nature. If you put a line down and tell your kids not to cross the line that you just put down that they never would have thought of crossing in the first place, now they're going to want to cross it even more because you told them they can't do it. Don't have rules that you don't need for the sake of wanting to control your kids' lives, for example. It's human nature. Mm. So, listen, we've got this show Sex in the Pews. And in a nutshell, the tagline is celebrating sexuality, exposing religion.
Right.
Bro, let me tell you something.
Something.
My good friend Ken Grant, that you're aware of, the smartest man I've ever known, brilliant.
Yep.
He's really challenged me on Sex in the Pews, on the whole premise. And he said to me, he said, brother, he said, do you know that your criticism of religion and the way that you are a proponent for openness in sexuality against strict monogamy is flying in the face of the vast majority of people in Western civilization. I said, I know. I know. I don't care. I think it's the truth.
Rock and roll, baby.
I think it's the most effective.
Fuck you.
Well, we do it with love, and we recognize that everybody is one, and everybody's perfect, and everybody's righteous, regardless if they have religion or not, or if they have belief or faith. This is what we've come to through our theological adventure over the last 30 or 40 years.
Yeah,
and it's fun. It's organized fun with a purpose.
Yep.
The purpose is to move the ball forward. The purpose is to leave the terra firma a little bit better than we found it.
Live in a little bit more peace, a little bit more harmony, a little bit more unity, a little bit more freedom. A little bit more open.
That's how I've conducted my life as screwed up as it's been from time to time. And it has done well for me. It has really turned out and is turning out pretty goddamn well. When I owned the summer camp in northern Wisconsin, we had 200 kids at a time and 50 staff members. We would like invade, you know, wherever we went as a group. And I would always tell the kids, we go to a campsite or we would go to a water ski show or a hotel for a trip or whatever the hell we were doing, I would say, look around, fellas. we're going to leave this a little better than we found it. What?
Some cameraman just got nailed in the nuts with a baseball by someone throwing the first pitch, and that's SportsCenter's in the reflection on this.
Oh, see, that's what I deal with, beautiful humans. That's Theodore Owen Pratt in a nutshell right there. Just had nothing to do with what we were talking about, but his mind was there, and it's a beautiful mind, and he does a great Russell Brand impression, that's for sure. So we adopted a highway by the camp, and it got a big, beautiful sign. This, you know, this highway is being taken care of by Camp Menominee. And so on the way to town for our big town day, which included the water ski trip, I had all the buses pulled to the side of the highway, and the kids would clean the highway, and they would get up into the woods. You'd be amazed how much garbage is in these pristine woods. You don't see it unless you get up in there. And so, you know, we got garbage bags, we got the orange vest going, we're pulling garbage out, and then this little 10-year-old, Tommy Schwartz, comes up to me, and he goes, "Glenn, look what I found." And he had a big used condom with the wad still in it.
Yay.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I got that, Tom. And then that I said, we're not doing this anymore. So I was just sending the counselors out to do it. I mean, you know, there's making a difference, and then there's making a difference. That's the last thing that the camp needs, is to get back to their parents. So, yeah, I understand you want to clean the environment, but why is my kid going into the woods and pulling out a used condom? That was.
But it's a risky run. I'm sure that all those beach cleanups we used to do, I'm sure there was a few condoms picked up
and
at some point.
And needles and stuff?
Needle, yeah.
Have you seen the commercial for these guys that are cleaning up the oceans?
That's why it's important to talk to your kids about sex.
That's another reason. Have you seen the commercial of these guys that are cleaning up the plastic in the ocean?
For ocean?
Yeah.
Yep.
Incredible.
Those people are from where I'm from. Kinda.
They're Tequesta. They're Jupiter people.
East Coast. I think they're a little farther south.
Dude, why is every government in the world that is so concerned about climate change and everything? Why aren't they just funding a massive effort with these guys and with that technology?
Because it's more profitable to argue about it.
Jesus. I mean, they just be there's they. I think that they said they've pulled up 2 million tons of plastic and garbage out of the oceans. 2 million tons.
Make good bracelets.
How do you know that?
So they sell those little four ocean bracelets. And so every time you buy one, it gets.
Have you seen the commercials or the stuff online with those guys?
Yeah.
They're studs.
Yeah.
They do the commercials without shirts on, looking fit, and their pecs and their cut, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Why do you think they do that, Big O?
Sex sells.
Sex sells, yeah. They're cleaning up the world's water supply.
Looking sexy as fuck.
And doing it while taking their shirts off. This is how intrinsic sexuality is still, and we're so messed up about it still. So listen to Sex in the Pews. Maybe you'll get a laugh and learn something and enjoy it. Mm. Improve your sex life too. And now, you know, we're eventually getting into relationship coaching as seminars and classes and stuff. So just stay logged on.
We've got our first mastermind group coming up in a couple weeks.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
You're giving a nice seminar.
Thank
doing
you.
A live podcast. Record, not live, but it'll be recording at this.
Well, it'll be recorded live as opposed to dead. So you're headed up to Tallinasty,
yep.
For the weekend for your brother Lauren Pratt's graduation from FSU.
Yep.
Also, our dear friend Jen Ward is graduating. Want to wish them a congratulations, a mazel tov. What is Lauren graduating in?
Interior architecture and design.
Right on. So when the buildings get knocked down from the dirty bomb, he'll be able to design the inside of all the new buildings.
Is that how the dirty bombs knock down buildings? I guess that was.
It could, I guess. Well, that was a whole bunch of horrible thoughts right in a row. And Jennifer Ward is graduating with
commercial
a degree in
real estate,
and she's about to crush it in the Tampa market.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And all the people that are graduating, whatever level, congratulations to you. Mm-hmm. And get after it. Make a difference. Leave the place a little bit better than you found it. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yep.
That's all we're asking. Is that too much to ask? I mean, I'm the guy, Big O, that when I'm taking the garbage from the Hitting Home Media Group studios to the dumpster here, mm-hmm. if there's trash on the sidewalk, I'm picking up the trash as I go. Because it's so easy to do. And I just left the sidewalk a little better off than I found it.
Right.
This is not that hard.
Yep.
Jesus. Christ, Lillian.
Name of my sex tape.
Well, have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you back in the pews on Monday. And
to it.
Yeah. And the Hitting Home Media Group studios. If you're interested in messaging and really stepping up your game as far as marketing is concerned, our website is hittinghomemedia.com.
And we've also got the, I'll be playing a show this weekend too, Boat Train. Rocking that out. BoatTrainBand.com. The Hitting Home Media corporate band.
Where's available? Where's that show? Do you know offhand?
Square Grouper. It's actually, there was a Jimmy Buffett and Alan Jackson music video for It's 5 o'clock somewhere was filmed at the place where we're going to be playing. It overlooks the Jupiter Lighthouse right on the water.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be a great venue.
Yeah. Cinco de Mayo, 2 to 6. A lot of family fun. We're going to do like limbo with the kids and drunk adults.
That's always more fun.
Yeah. We got a lot of fun activities planned.
Great.
Yep.
And we look forward to seeing you back here in the Bay of the Tampa. And we just wish you guys a wonderful weekend. Have a fun Cinco de Mayo. Boy, I tell you, Americans, you know, we make more of a deal out of these so-called cultural holidays like St. Patrick's Day. they hardly notice it in Ireland.
But you should have seen the Irish celebrating 4th of July when I was with a group of them in New York. They went fucking nuts.
Yeah, but they were here. Yeah. But we celebrate the 4th. Any reason for Americans to get drunk? You know, I mean, we're just down with it. We're just a bunch of alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
The most powerful country in the world, under stress, 24/7, and we drink our way through it. Probably not the most effective.
There was some of these Irish kids that had longer hair, shaved their heads into mullets, and got squirt guns and Nerf guns, and just jorts and fucking drinking Natty Light or Bud Light. Just
screaming,
that's America.
You know how much I respect your dad, right?
Yeah.
But when I heard that he drinks Nasty Light, I was like, wow. That's a real man.
Holy. Smoking Marlboro Reds, drinking Natty Light.
America.
America.
John Pratt is a good man.
Vietnam vet.
Well, please give our love to everybody in Tallinasty. Mm. And you guys, you can communicate with us in many ways, but the website is coachglennkline.com for the relationship stuff, glennklineonline.com for this podcast, sexinthepews.com. Mm-hmm. And you can look at and check out Owen at Owen in the Pews.
Yep.
on the Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
How many followers do you have now?
I'm floating around 2,400.
Mm-hmm. And you pretty much accept everybody, yeah?
There's no discrimination.
Right on. All right, well, have a wonderful weekend. We love you. If there's anything we can do for you, just do not hesitate to reach out. And we will do it all again next time on Glenn Kline Online. And until that time, this is Glenn Kline.
And Owen Pratt.
Saying, Shalom, everybody. Boom.